Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We come to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
CJ gets the snap. CJ fires over the middle, and he's got his man across the 10. 5, cutting inside. Dell breaks a tackle. Touchdown, Houston. Tank Dell with the TD catch and run off the arm of CJ Stroud.
Pena drills one. High and deep to left field. The kid from Rhode Island just puts one out of the stadium at Fenway. And the Astros have double figures. It's 10-0.
Hanging slider, and JP3 goes yard.
Yeah, man. It was a hell of a weekend here in Houston. That was nice. Here in Houston and in Boston on behalf of Houston. Yeah, it was a great weekend.
It was a lot of hospitality by an otherwise grumpy area of the country.
It's very nice of them. They accommodated the Astros very well, allowing them to score 23 runs over three games. That was really good, man. Good weekend. Hope you all had a great weekend. It's great to be with you here on a Monday, a reaction Monday, we'll call it today, because we do have a lot to react to. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. How are you, my friend? How was your week? Was your weekend as good as the Astros and the Texans?
It was
weekend?
Good. I honestly got a little overwhelmed this weekend because there was football everywhere. And I was, you know, trying to digest the all 22 of the Texans while also taking in the first quarter or just the first couple series of a lot of these preseason games. And it was nice. It was nice to have everything back.
It was fun, man. It was fun.
Also kudos to the Yankees, who right now we're not trying to win the league or anything. The Yankees knocked off the Rangers several times.
Yeah, that was good. Several times.
It was so the Northeast was good to the Astros this week.
Big time. Yep, they're in Florida to take on Tampa for a few games. We'll get to them. Texans and Texans Steelers on Friday. You heard that Tank Dell touchdown coming in. There's a lot to get to unpack from that game. There was a night practice last night. A lot of friendly faces back at that one. Laremy Tunsil back in uniform. Joe Mixon back. Christian Harris was back for a little while. Yeah, for a little
and
bit.
And then he walked off with the assistance of
and
a
he
trainer.
Wasn't.
Yeah. I'm trying not to panic about Christian Harris, but I'm panicking a little bit. There's a little bit of pee in my underwear right now, Sean. I pee about 3 milliliters an hour, just kind of just nervous about Christian Harris.
Okay,
yeah.
That was a lot of detail. So let's dig into the game. 20-12, the Texans beat the Steelers on Friday night. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game. The big thing that got people excited is what you heard bumping in here. Great to see Tank Dell get into the end zone. Great to see C.J. Stroud throw him a touchdown pass. Here was D'Amico Ryans on what we saw from the first team.
I think both of our units went out and made plays. Offensively, we were efficient. Loved C.J. to Tank, that connection, making a big play for us. Tank getting in the end zone. Happy to just see him back. And we lost Tank last year to the injury. And you see why we missed him, right? He's a big play threat every time he's on the field, so I was excited to see that connection make a big play for us, and defensively, seeing Daniil step up and get after the quarterback is why we got him here, right? To get after the quarterback, and that's what he showed in his limited snaps, but he did a really great job of doing getting after the quarterback, being disruptive up front. Like, that's what we expected. So excited to see what Daniil did as well.
Okay, so the two freaks of nature on the team, the guys who are most physically freaks of nature, and who are at opposite ends of the spectrum, Tank Dell and Danielle Hunter. You know, it's kind of like a prize poodle and a prize Great Dane. You're like, wow, they're both so impressive, but just in much different ways. It doesn't look humanly possible that they're even the same species. What the hell is this? So those are the two guys that I think really jumped out. The best part about Danielle Hunter is this. I think on that screen, which ended up, you know, being kind of a nice play for the Bears, it's a screen where the offensive line is kind of trying to let the defensive line win, but you can't let them win too
Not
well.
Not that fast.
Yeah, yeah. And because he's got such a big radius,
yeah.
He almost really screwed up Justin Fields' day on that, because he just encompasses so much volume in space that was really cool. And then on Danielle Hunter's sack, likewise, that was, I mean, he just ran the hoop, you know, that poor number 74 for the Steelers just, it was left in that zone of like, what am I going to do here? I can't block you right on a screen.
It's crazy.
I can't block you right properly. And Danielle Hunter was just a machine out there. The other thing, Tank Dell, that was beautiful, and I think a little bit of an offshoot of what happens when you have so many receiving threats on the field is that some guys in coverage, their minds turn to mush, and they start looking at, like, oh, what's my threat underneath? Oh, but, oh gosh, there goes Tank Dell behind me.
Yeah.
Their ability to carve up zone is going to be interesting this year. It's not, I mean, there's still some issues on the offensive line. There's big issues in the run game. They have yet to really run the ball well in the first quarter. And how much of that is Damian Pierce? How much of that is the offensive line? It's a lot bit of both, I think. So, but as far as Tank Dell, the biggest Tank Dell on the punt return, you and I haven't talked about this yet. Tank Dell had a really nice punt return. Then at the end, former Houston Texans player, and I'm guessing former Australian after this, because I don't think they'll allow him back in Australia.
Right.
Like, you're representing your country by hitting Tank Dell out of bounds.
Tank Dell, great American, out of bounds.
That's your big, like, I'm a tough guy. I used to play Aussie rules football.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I feel like in Aussie rules football, they might take you out and dunk you in a river.
Frown
after,
upon that.
After
yep.
something like that. Yep. Yeah. Just a dirty hit on a tiny guy out mm-hmm. of bounds. But it did raise the question, all right, dude, how do we feel about Tank Dell returning punts?
I've got a feeling on that. Look, I was advocating for Tank Dell returning kicks in this new kickoff world that we live in, which, by the way, still sucks. This new kickoff sucks. I don't like it at all.
I felt better about it after this weekend.
Did you? I'm just not a fan.
I felt like there were better moments.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not a fan. But to answer your question, do you remember back in 2016 when the Texans would use Will Fuller as like a break glass in case of emergency punt returner? Like mm-hmm. at certain times, and he won a game for them early in his rookie year against the Titans with a punt return. I could see them doing that with Tank, where, like, maybe not in the first or second quarter, but if it's the third quarter, fourth quarter, they're down seven, other teams punting to them. You know, Tank's clearly got a different gear than other people at right. everything football wise.
Yeah.
So I could see them using him like that, and I wouldn't mind it. That was really cool to see. I would anticipate that not as many teams are going to be as stupid as the Steelers and drill him out of bounds during a real game like they did.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and yet it does happen, you know. That's always the thing with Tank. It's that, all right, on goal line there when he breaks his leg, it's not going to happen every time, but when it does happen, he's...
Do you like it?
I like it, yeah. I like it. I think, honestly, you put the ball in the hands of your playmakers as much as possible.
Dude, yeah.
And there's... You know, they're going to – I'm not worried at all about, like, how the guys get their touches, but there's a lot of athletic ability out there.
Yeah.
Now, Tank Dell on his touchdown – I didn't even talk about that. Yeah. Tank Dell on his touchdown, that's the moment there where, look, the offense wasn't looking all that hot, kind of disjointed, but at any given moment, you're going to have moments like that. And CJ was able to hit Tank Dell – in stride, on time, didn't need brilliant pass protection. He just needed the play to play out the way they wanted the play to play out. That was really nice to see. And then if you add to that the fact that, you know, Cade Stover's receptions. You watch Cade run. It's not he doesn't have like a George Kittle level of athleticism, but as long as he knows where to go and as long as he's running his routes well, the Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz are going to be outlets on this when teams are worried about all that other receiving talent.
Yeah, dude, you Cade, there was a practice, an evening practice last night, as we mentioned a little earlier in the open here. Cade was getting snaps with the ones, and he was piecing last night, man.
Yeah,
got behind the defense on a play for a long touchdown, had a crosser over the middle where he, like DeAndre Hopkins style, just snared it, plucked it. I mean, Cade Stover's going to get a lot more snaps than your garden variety fourth-round pick with this team.
I think I've seen progress with his blocking. He's still got some issues. I mean, part of it is, you know, everything that Damian Pierce has talked about with how hard this offense is because it's such a big playbook. And there's so many checks before the snap at the line of scrimmage that you got to figure out. So they've got Cade back there playing fullback at times, you know, H-back, tight end, all those things. You can see the hesitancy at times, but on the plays where he knows what he's doing for sure, I think he's doing some good things.
Yeah.
It's just all that mental stuff that you got to clean up, and that'll be a year-long process.
We'll get to the Astros in the next segment because they deserve a little more than the couple minutes we have left here. What did you think of the defense on Friday?
I thought the should have been a touchdown by Kyle Allen. That was an obvious mental error miscommunication.
Like the three stooges. Three guys ran into each other.
Well, two guys jumped out. I was wondering, I was getting all ready to explain that on the goal line, there's no such thing as an illegal pick, that it's all, hey, rub routes are legal right on the goal line. Those wide receivers can pretty much do whatever they want. And then you go back and watch it, and you're like, oh, they didn't even have to do it.
No, they picked each other.
This was just two defensive backs pouncing on the outside receiver when one of them, they were either supposed to switch or stay man the whole way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if the starters had made that mistake, I'd be really, really nervous. But I can excuse that because otherwise it was a good play in terms of putting some heat on the quarterback.
Yeah. There are a lot of chunk plays, it felt like, for the Steelers. What did you think? The Steeler people were really excited about Justin Fields, and I guess the numbers look good. What did you think?
I don't know if I sent you that one article that said that Justin Fields showed that he had what it took. I thought it was exactly what Justin Fields has always been since he's gotten to the NFL, is yes, he can make the really nice plays and throws. It's not just, I think every time Justin Fields makes a nice throw, people are like, there you go. He's the guy. I'm like, no, it's a matter of how consistently you do it.
Yep.
And I can't excuse the fumbled snaps. You know, there's a guy that has struggled whenever they've asked him to operate like an NFL quarterback and play under center and do all those other things. Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator up there, it loves the play action, is going to need the quarterback under center. I think Russell Wilson won the starting job just by the bobbled snaps alone. That was it was some ugly stuff he put out there.
Wow, so you think just by not being out there, Russell Wilson that Friday was good for him, huh?
He's not gonna be the source of four turnovers in a game as often as Justin Fields.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody in Pittsburgh should get excited about either of their quarterbacks.
No.
I thought it was a good debut for Davis Mills I just kept thinking, like, man, you probably wouldn't have to. Maybe I don't know if the Texans would have relinquished Davis Mills, but he's clearly worth more in a trade right now than Justin Fields' conditional seventh or sixth round pick or whatever they gave up for him.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're off and running. A reaction Monday. Texans win on Friday against the Steelers. We got a lot to get into from that game. Practice last night. We'll do a sort of a stock up, stock down on the Texans at 7 o'clock. Got a lot of acknowledgments at 7:20 on the show today, but let's dig into the Astros next. Good weekend, great weekend for the Astros. There's a trend with the Astros that has me feeling very confident if they do indeed make the postseason, and we will get to that coming up next.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Really good weekend in Boston. As Seth pointed out earlier, Boston was uncharacteristically hospitable to outsiders from the South on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, capped off by a 10-2 win yesterday. The one thing, we'll get into some of the individual performances, because Yordan Alvarez and Alex Bregman just, completely ruined the Red Sox over the weekend. Ooh. I think the big thing for me, Seth, like going into this week, I'm like, okay, this is a team that the Astros, who are, by the way, still in a virtual tie for first place in the American League West. So they're, in a way, they're just as much a wild card team as the Seattle Mariners are right now. If you look at the standings, they just don't show up there because they're leading the division literally by a percentage point. That's it. So I'm, the worst case scenario is you still got to treat them like a wild card team. And coming into the weekend, the Red Sox were a game and a half out of the last wild card spot. The Astros were four games out. Well, they've flipped that now. They swept them, so they're a half game up on the Red Sox now. So that was good news. And as I just got thinking about the Astros over the last few weeks, really maybe even going back to the Baltimore series in June, in late June, which is that's where the season really flipped for them, and they started to kind of – that led them into the month of July, which was easily their best month of the year so far. The thing that gives me confidence with this Astros team, an Astros team that's been wildly inconsistent this year, is that they've actually still played pretty well of late, over the last month and a half or so against good teams. Which is, that's how they've been in previous years, but this year they've been losing to mediocre and bad teams much more than in years past. But they still, when Baltimore was in town, and it's a huge series for the Astros, and they're teetering on the brink of being knocked out of the race, what do? They sweep them. The Dodgers come to town. They take two out of three, including a huge comeback win on Saturday that weekend. Man, they need to win some games against the Mariners. They take two out of three. They need to win these games against Boston because it's starting to be nut-cutting time here. It's going to be September before we know it. They go up there, and they don't just sweep them. They annihilate the Red Sox, over the weekend. So that's the thing for me with the Astros. Like, that's what was great to see. Like, okay, there's September and October, Bregman. You know what I mean? Like, there's, Yordan's great in every month, but he's especially great in Fenway Park.
He's especially great when he plays left field every day, it's been of late. And that's one of the huge questions. This will be one of the fascinating developments over the remainder of the season. Is there's going to be times where, man, Yordan's out there in left field every day, because no matter how bad he is as a left fielder, and I know, yeah, he's better than people expected, but he's still not a good left fielder. The way he's been hitting the ball, especially this last five games, it's just, that's the trade-off you want. But there's going to be times where Espada is going to have to swap out Chaz McCormick for Yordan Alvarez because you need somebody in left field late in the game. Yeah. It's going to be dicey. So I feel much, much better over the last five games, and yet they're still in a very precarious situation. They haven't lost since DiCenzo came up.
He's the key.
Yeah, that's the key. But I think the biggest thing is Bregman, Altuve, and Yordan are 25 for 60 in that stretch. Bregman's got five extra base hits. Yordan's got five home runs. Like, they're getting everything you want out of those guys right now, which is, that's like the easiest thing in baseball. If you want to be a great team, your great players got to play great, at least most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, you need your role players to step up here and there. But if Bregman can keep this up, this is good. It's got that good feeling all
over
again. Yeah,
it's huge because Yordan's going to hit. I mean, Yordan has an argument to be as the best hitter on the planet. Like, he's at his best. He's that good. Like, dude, the numbers for these two this weekend, like in the three games, Yordan's OPS in those three games was almost 2,300. Bregman's was almost 2,000. And Yordan in Fenway Park, if he played for the Red Sox, holy smokes, the numbers he would put up with the pesky pole down the right field line and with the green monster staring him right in the face when he decides to go oppo. Like, holy cow.
Rafael Devers, after one of the games, I guess, had said that, you know, his interpreter, after Devers gave his quote, Callis told the story yesterday, was he said, the interpreter said that Yordan's one of the best players in baseball. And I guess it sounds like Devers was like, knows his English well enough to be like, no. I said the best hitter in baseball. Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm not giving obvious takes over here. I'm giving hot takes, interpreter.
Now Devers has to go and check and see if his interpreter is into gambling. like, how much can I trust you, you
right.
SOB?
Right.
Why are all these baseball interpreters going rogue all the time? My God.
Yeah, that guy ruined it. Otani's guy ruined it for all the interpreters.
Devers on Saturday was when Devers struck out on Saturday. He's fun to watch, man. He stood at the plate and angrily started taking his gloves off. He's just disgusted with himself.
That's good. Arrighetti is a big story this weekend. Ocho Texan, good morning, guys. Did I miss the Spencer Arrighetti is the new Garrett Cole segment? No, you're here for it now, Ocho.
Right.
Spencer Arrighetti's been amazing the last really since the All-Star break. I won't say amazing since the All-Star break. These last two starts have been incredible. The first rookie in American League history with 12 plus strikeouts and back-to-back starts.
He's one of these guys, I think, where you and I have differed a little bit on a couple things. I think I've been more skeptical of the Astros pitching analytics and coaching staff to be as good as they once were at just absolutely capturing the most out of these guys. And yet, you know, Arrighetti has been a great look at what they've been able to do. Hunter Brown, even though the big change came with Alex Bregman's advice. Yeah. You got to credit the entire organization, I think, for bringing Hunter Brown the way they have. But whereas you've been more, I realize what it was. I think I've been more bullish on Arrighetti than you in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also been a known JP France hater. I think it's a you're an anti-European, which I can appreciate. So JP France by his name being France and Arrighetti by having
France.
An obviously. Frankly, I'm surprised.
I'm a xenophobe. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm surprised that you're into Caratini as much as you are, who's he's from Puerto Rico, but is I think he's got an Italian grandfather.
Like
or
all
something.
These guys. What are you talking about?
You hate the Euros. Which
I don't,
is cool. That's fine. That's
here.
Fine.
No, I hate the ones that were playing our American basketball team over the weekend, but I don't hate the ones that are on the Astros. I like them, you know?
I think the Italian women's volleyball beat the U.S. also.
Really?
Making
Bastards.
A surge.
Yeah.
Blanco. Now, Blanco's another story. Blanco's gone four games without going six innings. He, in his last start, he surpassed his career high for innings pitched in a year. That's the one where, man, it feels, it's tenuous. He's teetering. We gotta pull him back to the light and not fall off into the darkness.
We haven't done a circle of trust in a while. We're not going to do one right now. Maybe we'll do one in the sometime this week. But if we were doing the circle of trust right now, Seth, Arrighetti, Rennell Blanco, are they in?
If I had to make the decision,
if you had to make the decision on either of them, and if they're both out, who's closer to being in right now, Arrighetti or Rennell Blanco?
This feels like a weird kind of King Solomon trial somehow. I got to go with Arrighetti.
Yeah, Arrighetti right now. Yeah, I think so too. Blanco, you know, Blanco's starting to leak oil a little bit. You know, like it's the wheels are, they're not off, but they're a little wobbly now.
It's not that I don't trust him as... It's weird. I still think of him as like a 24-year-old because he's relatively new to starting.
Yeah.
But it's a usage thing. If they can manage him fighting through however he's feeling right now, by, you know, they've been spacing his workout a bit, and they can do that more now. I still think there's a good chance he pulls through and fights through whatever he's going through.
It'd be interesting, man. Spencer Arrighetti making it interesting. We haven't mentioned. This is probably the best weekend the Astros have had in a while. They sweep the Red Sox in super convincing fashion. And then Justin Verlander had a nice solid start at Sugarland on Saturday, threw 52 pitches. You know, 52 pitches in three innings is, you know, it's a little high, but only one run, couple of hits, three strikeouts, topped out at nearly 96 miles an hour. Like, that
That's
was
what if, we were looking for.
I would have
signed
up for that.
For velo, right?
Velo, baby.
We were like, all right,
yep.
Does he have his velo?
And he did.
If he has, or is he going to have to go the Zach Greinke route and become a junk ball dude late in his career?
How about,
he's still got his speed.
How about, was it, what was the Red Sox players? It's Scott, Dominic, what's the first baseman, I think, who was pitching in the, I don't know if you stuck around for watching the ninth inning where the Red Sox.
I didn't, I quit.
Yeah.
I had yard work to do. I told Brandy around the seventh. Whenever they're huge, the Red Sox bullpen, once they got to the bullpen.
Yeah.
Once a starter goes out with a strained calf.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox bullpen has been the worst bullpen in the league over the last month. So the Astros just feasted.
It's so bad. No, dude, they put Dominic Smith. They put a position player in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
He was throwing stuff that made Greinke look like Nolan Ryan. Like he threw, and the funny thing is, Seth, you know, they have the velo on the graphics right there of every pitch. Like his first pitch, 47 miles per hour.
That's hard to hit if you're not used to it.
He got out of the inning. He got a double. Yeah. Like he didn't give up any runs. He got a little trafficy, but then he got a double play to get out of the inning.
I'm always amazed by how finely tuned Major League Baseball hitters are that just seeing a bad pitcher sometimes screws them up. It's like our supply chain during COVID. You're like, oh, everything, we've got this immaculate supply chain. Everything is just-in-time manufacturing. You throw a little virus and some masks into the equation. Everybody's like, no toilet paper for
anybody.
Nobody's
getting anything. Yeah.
You go from being the most advanced economy that ever was to like, no, you can't. You got
to
wipe your butt with your bare hand. Sorry about it.
Wiping your butt with leaves. Yeah. yeah, dude, he was throwing some junk up there. He was throwing like 48 mile an hour, just, I don't even know what to call them. They're like just lob pitches out there. And then out of nowhere, he humps it up to 79 miles an hour, and the crowd goes, whoa!
I don't know what was going on with the Yankees yesterday, except that they had a huge lead. They relinquished it. And I'm guessing this is where you got to be thankful for Minute Maid Park.
Yeah.
The Yankees have had a couple doubleheaders in the last few days. They got to some inning. They had a reliever pitch like 50 pitches as he was getting shelled. And I think they probably just, they're bereft of relievers.
Yes.
They just had to leave him out there and sweat it out.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You got to take one. Take one for the team. So good weekend for the Astros. As far as the Texans go, we'll get into headlines. We'll get into stock up, stock down for the Texans at the top of the hour. I would say, Seth, the two biggest, I'll say bubble guys now, right? Like neither of these guys are, they're far from guaranteed to make the team. I think one's on a bigger bubble than the other. But it wasn't a great night for Damian Pierce or John Mechie on Friday.
Yeah, Damian Pierce, it's, you know, we're stuck back in that old conundrum of, look, the blocking is not ideal out there. Chris Reed, the right guard that was filling in for Tank.
Shaq Mason.
I have my fun first names. I mix those up. Hold on. I retract my ding. There.
Damian Pierce.
The tough thing with zone blocking is that sometimes it doesn't look like there's a clear place to go. You go back and watch some of Arian Foster's great runs, and the blocking is good, but he's squeezing through a narrow window. And I think that Damian just doesn't feel this offense the same way a lot of good running backs do in this system. And yet also there were issues with the blocking. So you got a two-headed monster there. I think to get the most out of Damian Pierce, it's going to have to be with Damian Pierce packages. It's going to have to be when you can just run old school man blocking schemes and what have you. But I don't know what your other options are outside of Joe Mixon. Cam Akers has done some really good things. I'm trying to figure out what Cam Akers' Achilles tendons are like. So for those of you who don't know, Cam Akers, the running back that the Texans signed right before camp, he's torn both Achilles tendons. It's a notoriously difficult injury for a running back to come back from one Achilles tendon. And yet he seems both prone to Achilles tendon tears, yet incredibly able to come back from them quickly.
Yeah.
So I decided his Achilles tendons are made out of salamander tails. I think that just as a salamander, you can cut off its tail and it'll grow right back. That's what his Achilles tendons are.
They're very easy to
sever, but they grow back quickly.
Salamander tails are to Achilles surgeries what cadaver elbows are to Tommy John surgery. That's what you're telling me right now?
Yeah, he can grow it his own. He's part Wolverine, part Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable.
There you go.
Yeah, like it's almost like if Samuel L. Jackson would get injured all the time, but also then heal very quickly.
He, you know, Cam Akers at the practice last night was getting some reps with the C.J. Stroud unit out there. So he's, you know, that's what I've been looking for this camp. I'm like, all right, Cam Akers has shown some things. Jawar Jordan has shown some things. All right, let's see him run with the first group and see what it looks like.
Yeah, you know? I think, you know, too, the other, that same thing's kind of happening with the receivers, where a lot of these guys like Johnny Johnson or Steven Sims or other guys are showing some flashes. And John Metchie is, he's not taking that next step.
No.
You know, and I think they're giving him the benefit of the doubt. And obviously he has huge India. This is where you got to be like very sterile in your emotions. It's like, all right, well, yeah, we're all pulling for him, and yet for what he can provide for the team this year, we really haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Outside of some glimpses in the individual periods in 7-on-7.
He was out there, Metchie was out there with Tim Boyle last night practice. So you can, that's how you can start to maybe decipher where guys are in the pecking order, is like, what quarterback are they out there with, you know? Because they're doing a lot of mixing and matching.
When John Harris said during the broadcast that Tim Boyle described himself as a gunslinger, I feel like that's a classic. Like, you know, if you've heard it, sometimes you've got a core part of your identity that might be the worst part of your identity, yeah. And you just don't want to relinquish it.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe if you're at this stage of your career, maybe you let go of that a little bit. Game manager isn't a dirty word when you're making $2 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay? So just, I don't know.
Is
I don't know
a
about
gunslinger?
That.
Sean Pendergast described himself as shredded. Like, what?
Huh? I'm one of those guys that can just eat whatever I want, you know?
you're
snorting off your way down the hallway.
Right, right. Why are you breathing? Why are you breathing so heavy doing radio?
Yeah.
All right, headlines. We'll dig back into that Steelers game, what the Texans accomplish on the road for a week, news surrounding the Astros, and the biggest trade that hasn't happened yet in the NFL. We have more news with that from over the weekend. We'll get into all that in headlines, and we'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get into it. Headlines. Texans beat the Steelers in their second preseason game, the Texans' second preseason game. It was the Steelers' first game, and it kind of looked that way in the first half. The Steelers looked like the sloppier and rustier of the two teams. The Texans have been on the road until they got home on Saturday. They've been on the road for about 10 days. D'Amico Ryans said following Friday night's game, they were excited to get home.
We're ready to get back home. We've been on the road long enough, so I know you guys are ready to get back home as well. But we're excited to get back home, see our families.
We'll dig deeper into the stuff from the game on Friday, the performances, who's ascending, who's maybe descending, who's on the bubble. We'll get into that at 7 o'clock. They practiced last night, and I would say, Seth, the Texans did. They had their evening practice last night in front of a full house and a line down the street to get in. Man, those of you, y'all are the real ones, the ones standing there in 98-degree heat down Merworth and around the corner to get into Texans practice. It is wild to see just the fervor for this team right now. It's really cool to see. Probably the biggest thing last night, Seth, was that Laremy Tunsil was back at practice.
Yeah.
And unlike Joe Mixon, who was back at practice, Laremy was actually out there doing 11-on-11 stuff. Titus did not practice. Blake Fisher, right tackle,
with the first team.
So that's I think that's a substantial development. Just like, okay, he is the swing tackle right now.
There's they'd had Broker out there, who's more of a guard than a tackle. He can play both, but Broker, for what you're hoping for, I think, probably did as much as you can expect. But Blake Fisher is just a different level of athleticism. And you can see the potential there with Broker, with Fisher. But he still needs seasoning. He still needs to keep working through this. But I think he's improved over the course of the last 3 weeks. It's just a matter of how much he's not George Fant right now.
No.
You know, last year, one of the biggest things that happened, I think, without George Fant is your swing tackle. And remember, George Fant looked atrocious during training camp.
He did.
He looked really, really bad.
Yep.
But without George Fant as your swing tackle last year, I don't think the Texans make the playoffs. So that you need Fisher. You've got two injury-prone offensive tackles. You need Fisher to hopefully just keep coming along. They played him longer than they did Kenyon Green in the game the other night. He's getting his reps, and he's doing some good things. He's just got to get rid of some of the little wrinkles that rookies always have.
I think it's safe to say, though. Maybe not safe to say, because you still got two more preseason games left and a lot of practices. But like if week one was tomorrow and Titus Howard couldn't play, Blake Fisher would be your starting right tackle, I would imagine, right now.
I think so. Yeah. And you work through it.
Yeah.
He's going to have some bad snaps. Cody Stutes. I think Cody Stutes said he looks good versus every pass rusher who's not Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson. It's all now. And the other part of that is the Texans know that if they have him out there versus the very best edge rushers in a game, they're going to give him some extra help, and CJ's going to be well aware of it too.
Yep.
You manipulate the protections and everything else. I'm more concerned. I'm not concerned about the pass protection, because with all of their offensive line issues last year, they still actually did a relatively good job protecting the passer through all of those other things. But the run game, I mean, if you want to be a genuinely elite offense, you got to be able to have plays where at any given time there's one defensive lineman. You got to get rid of these plays where one defensive lineman is completely free into the backfield.
Yes.
Kind of a big deal.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, man. You got Precious Cargo back there playing quarterback, man. You got to protect him.
It's the run game. I'm not worried about C.J. Stroud. I'm worried about the run game. Because people say, well, yeah, they're going to face a lot of light boxes. Yeah, they did last year, too, and they couldn't run the ball.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to capitalize on those loosened up boxes that you see when you've got all this receiving talent out
there. Did you get a chance to watch, focus in on Kenyon Green in this game?
Yeah, and I think they did some really good things at times. I do think that the cohesion is coming along, but there's also times where it shows up very poorly. Yeah. So they just got to iron it out. I think you're seeing progress. It's just, we're kind of like I am with Kyle Tucker right now. Like, all right, positive signs are good.
Yeah.
But we're burning daylight here.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's get to that. Let's circle over to the Astros. We talked plenty in the previous segment about the sweep of the Red Sox this weekend. The bats woke up on the road, as they tend to do with this team. Kyle Tucker might be getting close to running the bases, so we'll see. Are we still at the stage where we don't believe anything that they're saying about Kyle Tucker, Seth?
It's not that I don't. This is the problem. I think that the nature of the injury, as you know, Chandler Rome consulted four orthopedic surgeons who all talked about this, is that it's impossible to really project how it doesn't have a standard recovery time.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon for people to have 4 months of issues with this. Yeah, I just wish. It's like all you ever hear is positive reports out of the Astros. So yeah, I don't really take any of the positive reports as all that positive.
Right. I'll believe it when they give him a rehab assignment in Sugar Land or Corpus Christi. That's when it gets real. Now, Justin Verlander did have a rehab assignment on Saturday. First of what's going to be probably a couple that he will have there. Pretty good one. Three nice innings for Justin Verlander. Gave up a run, struck out three guys, threw 52 pitches, topped out at 96 on the gun. Here's Justin Verlander on how he felt on Saturday.
Physically, felt good. Was able to kind of step on a few fastballs there at the end. Checked all the boxes I needed to today. Today was just about going out there and being able to compete and have everything physically feel good. So that was a box checked. Tomorrow, same thing. Just make sure I recover well. And I don't anticipate anything weird. The neck thing when it happened, it was an acute thing. I felt it when it happened. It wasn't like a delayed onset type of thing. So, I don't anticipate there being any setbacks or anything tomorrow.
Just so people know, Justin Verlander was not doing that media session in front of a crowd of Astros fans cheering each of his answers, because that's what it sounds like. They were showing.
Oh yeah, it did work out that way, didn't it?
They were showing highlights from the game. It did, he's like, I felt really good afterwards.
It was an acute condition, not a lingering chronic situation.
They were showing him strike guys out at Consolation Field.
It is.
And that was the crowd cheering, yeah.
It's funny with pitchers, or I guess in sports in general, that, acute always sounds worse, except that you hope it's acute. It's something that you get an injury and then you recover from it instead of this ongoing battle.
Yep, so good news with Justin Verlander. Hey, real quick, the NFL, the Brandon Ayuk trade that was all but done to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now the meter seems to be pointed more towards Brandon Ayuk, I guess, staying with San Francisco. They've reopened talks, and the news coming out over the weekend, Seth, was that the trade that would have sent Brandon Ayuk to Cleveland, this would have been a blockbuster. Amari Cooper, a 2 and a 5, second round pick and a 5th round pick for Brandon Ayuk, and Brandon Ayuk kiboshed that he didn't want to go to Cleveland.
And it would have been perfect for the 49ers because, when you trade a player this time of year, the trouble is, you get draft picks, but great, what do we do with them? They don't help us this season.
Yep.
They would have gotten a very steady and reliable receiver with lots of experience in a West Coast system that can literally do well on the West Coast.
Yeah. Are you surprised that it's looking like Ayuk back to the Niners? I mean, this thing could take five more.
No,
turns
I'm not. Nothing
them.
Surprises me. I tell you what, these so-called newsbreakers who were throwing it out there that it was all but a certainty that he was going to the Steelers. They got to recognize they're going to start. They're messing with gamblers now. There are a lot of people that are laying down futures bets on Brandon Ayuk going to the Steelers. This is like a goal. This is like somebody kicking it into the wrong goal in South America or something. Man. You better watch your back when you're out at the local pub. Yeah. Yeah. People get angry about this stuff when you start messing with their paycheck.
I know as well as anybody. They're my people. I know how angry they get.
I'm one of you people now.
No, I know.
Because last night I sent you my wager slip of me betting on Kamari Lassiter being defensive rookie of the year. And I was like, so is Lassiter out there? Is Lassiter at practice?
No.
He said no. And I was like, oh!
No, he was not.
Sean, I got $800 I'm depending on coming for my $20 bet at the end of the
40
year.
40-1, huh? 40-1, yeah. I'm so proud of you. That's
I feel like I'm looking down the list of all these potential candidates. I feel like Kool-Aid McKinstry is up there just because of his name.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys. And Leatu Leitu is, I think, the leader right now. Yeah. He's the pass rusher the Colts drafted. I like Kamari Lassiter's chances.
I do too, man. Stingley's on the other side. Lassiter's going to get plenty of action.
And rookies, that's what happens to rookies. They get tested in those first couple years.
Yeah, man.
The great defensive backs rarely have a boatload of interceptions after their first couple years. They get tested their first couple years, and they feast. And then after that, teams stop testing them.
Yep, take under 3.5 interceptions for Stingley, and thank me later. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so who got the big performances in this weekend with their stock up? Who was stocked down this weekend as well? Well, do acknowledge me at 7:20. Ooh, man, we've got an acknowledgement from the Luke Combs concert that we've got to get to from a very famous face here in town from over the weekend. We'll do that at 7:20. A reminder, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's do a little stock up, stock down. Winners and losers from the Texans this weekend following their 20-12 win over the Steelers. A lot of good performances. A lot of performances that are going to impact some decisions here pretty soon. Here was D'Amico Ryans on what he saw from the first team offense and first team defense in the snaps they played on Friday.
I think both of our units went out and made plays. Offensively, we were efficient. Loved CJ, the Tank, that connection, making a big play for us. Tank getting in the end zone. Happy to just see him back. Now, we lost Tank last year to the injury, and you see why we missed him, right? He's a big play threat every time he's on the field. So I was excited to see that connection make a big play for us. And defensively, seeing Daniil step up and get after the quarterback is why we got him here, right, to get after the quarterback, and that's what he showed in his limited snaps, but he did a really great job of doing getting after the quarterback, being disruptive, up front. Like, that's what we expected. So excited to see what Daniil did as well.
All right, Seth, which freak would you like to start with first, Tank Dell or Daniil Hunter?
Daniil Hunter is the freak of nature that I'm most excited about, just because I was already excited about Tank Dell. We've seen him moving around. We've seen that he's completely recovered from all of his various medical issues, I think. And Daniil Hunter, it's like it takes a special human being to screw up a screen as a defensive end, because that was like a split screen where they had two options on it, and the offense, some of the offensive linemen were moving out towards the screen, but the offensive tackle was supposed to block Daniil Hunter, or at least if you're gonna, you let him win, but not let him win so fast, and he made it very, very uncomfortable for Justin Fields in that moment, and then the sack was just purely like, all right, you can't leave the right tackle alone versus Daniil Hunter. He just ran around him like he was a fence post.
Yeah.
You know? And then he put, and then Justin Fields, I feel like Justin Fields left his testicles on the field after that play. He went down with like a swipe of the wrist.
Yeah.
On, that was a, or a flick of the wrist.
Yeah.
That was like a Yordan Alvarez home run.
Yes.
Where it doesn't even look like he swung the bat and it goes 450 feet.
Yeah.
Justin Fields went down like a sack of potatoes because Daniil Hunter laid his hands on him.
Yep.
It was like it was ordained by God or something.
This is how you know Minnesota as a state is completely like off the grid. When you're playing up there, yeah, you're toiling in anonymity. Daniil Hunter has been a very respected player in the NFL for a long time, I think, within NFL circles. That he's this freaky and he doesn't get the attention, and because he's got the numbers to back up the freakiness. You know what I mean? It's not like he's been some guy that is this specimen who you go, well, someday he's going to get double-digit sacks, like Clowney. You know, or no, like he's been averaging double-digit sacks every year for as long as he's been in the league. He had 16 and a half last year and damn near led the league in sacks. And
yeah.
And it's just like now you're like, okay, this guy's this freaky, and he has not gotten the requisite level of attention for someone who's got just this level of pop. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's really cool to see him out there on the field. And there's no Will Anderson out there.
Yep.
So now, and other guys too. Just we'll get to the Tank in 3 seconds. Jerry Hughes showed up in that game. Like the defensive tackles, Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi, Sean. I'll do a YouTube breakdown of this later. It's one of my most favorite plays I've ever seen out of two defensive tackles. On one of those stuffs up the middle, it might have looked like a jumble of humanity, but they just absolutely destroyed the blocking on one of those plays. And the defensive line is coming along. Tank Dell, I think, his touchdown was the exact thing that you hope to happen when you have so many receiving threats on the field all at once.
Wide open spaces.
He was wide open. Like, yeah, it puts people into a bind, and like defenders' brains turn to liquid and run out their ears because you've got a really good receiver crossing the field in front of you, and yet you're in zone, and Tank Dell is hitting that void in the zone, and C.J. Stroud's hitting him right on time and in rhythm with a perfect pass. And then because he's got room to run, Tank Dell gets a touchdown out of something that maybe should have gotten stopped at like the 10, but he breaks a face mask and another attempted tackle. That was really fun to see, because otherwise the offense had been kind of disjointed up to that point.
Yeah. I mean, one big play like that gets you feeling good about it. And Tank had a 22-yard punt return that helped set up that touchdown. So that was like a Tank Dell sequence right there. Tank chatted with Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network on the field after the game and said it felt good to be back.
250 days since you last played in a live game. 250 long days right back in the end zone. How did that feel?
It felt great, man. I want to give all the glory to God, you know, just to come out here, you know, healthy, feeling good, man. You, like you said, 250 days since I stepped on the field and played in the NFL game. So I'm just excited, I'm happy, and I'm thankful.
Were you not going to go down? Because you got hit there before you got in the end zone. Were you thinking you're not going down?
No, I wasn't going down. Nah, I had to get back in there, man. It felt good getting back in there. I had to.
Yeah, so that was Tank. Felt good to get into the end zone. Here was C.J. Stroud. Felt good to have Tank back in the lineup with
him. Yeah, he's tough, man. You know, he's just he's resilient. You know, you can't deny it. Just pure, just one God-given talent, but also just like hard work. You see, you know, the work that he puts in day in and day out, and you know, I think
every time he touches field, you see it, and it's put on display. So, you know, I think it's just a start for him, and he's going to continue to grow and grow. And, you know, it's amazing to get one of my best friends back on the field.
Yeah, that was cool to see, man. You're right, dude. Tank, and we'll talk about this in Acknowledge Me, but Stephon Diggs, like, it was really cool to see Stephon Diggs. If you watch the All-22, as soon as Tank catches the ball, Diggs has his arms up like this. He's like, like Rocky at the top of the steps at the museum. You know?
Yeah, that was and also, too, the other, since I know a lot of people probably saw this, the footage from the broadcast where Stephon Diggs was talking to C.J. Stroud on the sideline.
Yeah.
And many people chose to interpret that as Stephon Diggs being a problem already.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw that as just Stephon Diggs talking about what he's going to do in certain situations, like the actual shop talk that goes on the sideline.
Yeah.
But I can understand somebody from Buffalo looking at that and interpreting it as the worst. It was, if you could do a lip reading on it, and or not a lip reading, but one of those fake lip readings and make it look really bad.
Yeah.
I honestly tried to remove all the filters and just watch it, and I think it was exactly what you actually want out of Stephon Diggs.
100%.
And what we've seen from all training camp is him getting very animated and passionate talking about nuts and bolts football.
Yeah, it's I think it's just how he communicates. So we'll get to that. That might be a stock down, but so Tank, great to see him back making plays. Danielle Hunter is going to be a terror this year. A couple other ones, Seth, that I think are going to impact some battles here in certain position groups. I think a lot like the Hall of Fame game, if you look at Cam Akers' box score, you go, all right. He had 9 touches for 41 yards, you know, 3 catches, 6 carries. Nothing killer if you just look at the box score. And yet, if you watch the game, and it was the reaction to it after the game, doing the post game was the same as what I'm about to say among Texan fans, is like it seems like there's just more there with Cam Akers than not just Damian Pierce, but the other guys that are getting the football now.
Yeah, and a lot of that just boils down to the stuff that's harder to pin exactly, other than to say he's just got better vision and a better feel for the offense.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's not going to be your number one guy. He's had 2 Achilles tendon tears. You got to be careful in what you can expect from him and how much you use him, I think. But he had something there. I think with Damian Pierce, Damian just might not be a good zone blocking runner. And I'll make partial excuses in that the blocking was not pristine for him at all. And yet, some of the plays that were real negative still probably should have been 3 or 4 yard gains. There's still an element of like, all right, no, there's that window, take it. You might have to beat a linebacker in the hole, but that's what good running backs do. He's not decisively taking those opportunities.
Yeah.
So I think there's opportunities for him in certain Damian Pierce packages and what have you. But more than anything, they really need Joe Mixon, who was out there at practice yesterday, looked healthy by your reports and others. So I'm not feeling great about Damian Pierce right now.
Yeah,
moment.
Yeah, no, and we're going to do stock down here in a minute. Spoiler alert, Damian's on the list. The wide receiver position is very interesting. There's a stock down there as well, but Robert Woods will not go down without a fight when it comes to his spot on this team. He had 4 catches. He was kind of like what Xavier Hutchinson was in the Hall of Fame game, you know? Like, those are 2 guys that are fighting for a spot right now, and Xavier Hutchinson in that Hall of Fame game was right where he needed to be on every play. He had 6 targets and 5 catches. Robert Woods had 4 catches for 42 yards, had a big conversion on a 3rd and 15 where Davis Mills kind of had to navigate a little traffic in the pocket and then just flipped it to him, and it was a nice catch and run. Go for the sticks, set up Dari Ogunbowale's touchdown.
Yeah, yeah. So, Woods has that thing, again, kind of like with Cam Akers, where there's a reliability there, and not with Cam Akers, but just an indefinable part of it that you got to remember, that when it comes to the regular season, your resume matters.
Yeah.
And that, man, sometimes being a safety blanket, it's used derisively at times, but no, that's a good thing to have somebody that's just exactly what he's always been. His man, he's exactly where the quarterback expects him to be, and is gonna, and the quarterback can let go of it whether he's well covered or not. It's hard to make some decisions in this receiver.
It is, man. The receiver room and the running back room. I think the defensive tackle room is going to have some interesting decisions to be made.
Yeah.
As far as one more. I'll call it stock up only because he was the only guy that I could notice out there that got this sort of treatment in the game. Allie Gay, the former LSU defensive end. You know, you're watching early in the game, and we know Willie Anderson didn't play in the game, so they're going with other, they're mixing and matching a defensive end, and you go, okay, who's this number 90 out here? Well, it's Allie Gay, and he's a big, long athlete, not super bulky, but just kind of, you know, for a defensive end, kind of skinny, but big and long and athletic. And so he's out there in the first quarter, like, oh, good for him, good for him. And then you look in the second quarter, and he's still out there. In the third quarter, and the fourth quarter, and Allie Gay winds up with 33 snaps in a preseason game, which is like the conversion chart for that is like playing 70 snaps in a regular season game.
With Allie Gay, even though he's been in the league for a bit now, he's a guy that, if I recall properly, had an injury in college and was always almost like a Manute Bol version of a defensive lineman where, man, there's something there. He's really long, but he's just got to grow into his man strength. And he's got to refine his game somewhat. I feel like he's grown into his man strength. He uses his hands really well. Now some of it is just refining his game. There was one play on the broadcast where they pinned it on him for losing contain, but I actually think it was a defensive back that had the force on that play. But then there was another play where Allie Gay had a wide receiver lined up outside him. It's a crack position where he's going to crack block you, crack down on you. And he was just completely oblivious to it. And he got knocked out of the picture inside and did lose the force on that. Like, there's some really good moments in that game. There's also some moments where he looked really raw. So I think they see the potential and they're trying to bring him along as much as possible. But he's done some really good things both in practice and in the game.
Does your eye test for that game with Allie Gay match his PFF score? Because he had the third best Pro Football Focus score on the team, 79.9.
Is that a good score?
That's a good score. That's a real. That's like a dark blue. Yeah, 79 is a good score. Okay. Yeah.
I hate those scores so much. Sure.
He was
good.
He was good in the game. Yeah, like a B plus maybe in the game, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't think there's still things about him that concern me for playing against starters
for sure.
But yes, there's something there. Yeah. He's just got to keep coming along.
Yeah. My guess is they try to sneak him through and get him on the practice squad, but we'll see. We'll see. Okay, so we're going to get to acknowledge me here in a few minutes. We got a lot more people to praise and acknowledge me, some of whom are being praised on the text page already. Don't worry, we'll get to our new punter, people. Don't you worry. As far as stock down goes for the Texans, Seth, from the game on Friday and just in general right now, I think we've hit Damian Pierce sufficiently in this segment. You touched on him earlier. John Mechie's the other one. He had a game a lot like the game that he had in the Hall of Fame game. One inconsequential short catch and then another drop for John Mechie. He's just not getting it done right now.
I think that John Mechie has made a lot of progress, I think, physically from where he's been, but it just doesn't look like he's integrated himself into the offense in scrimmage situations and game situations.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of other receivers right now that have just flashed a lot more,
all of
both
them.
In practice and in the games. Quintez Cephas continues to show up. Like, he always shows up. Every few practices, he'll make some snag that is really impressive. He's done it in the game now. Ben Skoranek continues to show up. Xavier Hutchins. I don't even say Xavier Hutchinson. He doesn't do it in flashes. He's just been way more consistent.
Yeah.
You know, I think that as of this moment right now, I'd have to say that you can't. Even though I still think there's more growth for John Mechie. But he's just not as far along as a lot of those other guys. Johnny Johnson, Steven Sims, a lot of those guys have just flashed a lot more than
all of them.
Has.
Other than the Yankee twin, all of them have made plays in preseason games so far.
And the drops with Mechie are a big deal because he needs to be the reliable one.
Right.
You know, he's not fast and slippery enough to get away with, well, yeah, he's got some drops, but boy, he affects the defense. No, he needs to be the guy that takes advantage of other people affecting the defense.
If it keeps trending this way, like if the Giants game goes the same way for Damian Pierce and John Mechie as this last game did, and in the case of Mechie, the way training camp's been going for him, then I think I think Nick is on the phone calling teams to see if he can get a day three pick or do one of those Damian and a six for a fifth kind of thing with both of those guys.
And we've seen, like, we saw this
with
David.
Sorry, Seth. They'd both get picked up very quickly if they got cut, I think, both of them.
Yeah. Do you think John Metchie gets picked up quickly?
Yes. Yeah, just okay. Basically, yeah, by some team that, for sure.
I think right now he reminds me a lot of David Quisenberry, who came back from cancer but just wasn't the same guy the first year or two that he came back, and then eventually worked his way into being a fringe everyday starter.
Yeah.
And so there was something there. And, you know, yes, he kept getting opportunities after he got completely recovered. So, there's going to be other teams out there that are – including the Texans, I think, that are trying to say, like, all right, it's a unique situation because of his cancer, but we just got to look at his scouting report and say, is that still in him?
Yes.
And I think there's some of his scouting report that, yeah, you feel like that's still in him.
Yeah, I'm just saying he'll get picked up. He might be wherever he gets picked up next for 2 weeks, and then he's gone again. But, he's a former 44th overall pick.
Yeah, when I say his scouting report, I mean his draft scouting report.
Yes, yes. I would say one other. How do you think Juice Scruggs played? He gave up a bad sack early in the game.
Well, he gave up a bad sack that included Chris Reed was combo blocking him there.
Yeah,
Juice Scruggs is still a work in progress, and it's always really hard with the centers and the guards to pin it on one specifically.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with him starting. I think he's kind of in that same boat of Blake Fisher, where you see the good and you see where there's some potential. Some of the real bad miscues with guys coming free up the middle have been about the timing and coordination between the center and guard and just the decisions you make in the moment. So that's just hopefully something you can clean up.
Yep. One more stock down. Seth kind of touched on it before. Stock down for the internet, who there's a big chunk of the internet that seems hell-bent on misinterpreting every Stephon Diggs interaction on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you pointed out earlier, this, you know, Stephon Diggs is probably just over there chopping it up about football and with C.J. Stroud, and it's a very benign conversation.
Right. Stephon Diggs and C.J. Stroud were just having a conversation on the sideline. Looked like Stephon Diggs was explaining what some aspect of route running based on what you're seeing from the defensive back. That's what it looked like to me. And C.J. was kind of like listening, interjected, all that. And I think it's very easy, if you go into that with a certain filter, to look at it like they were having an argument. Where really, I mean, it just looked like exactly what we've seen out there in practice every day.
Yeah.
Which the players, both on offense and defense, have been gushing about with Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
It makes me wonder, too. I mean, sometimes, you know, like CJ is perfectly fine having really blunt conversations when it comes to football.
Yep.
I think that's why he and Bobby Sloat get along. I don't think either one of them gets sensitive at all. Remember after the Panthers game when CJ said we just got to be more aggressive and said some things in a way that almost sounded like he was criticizing Bobby Slowick?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the exact same conversation. I think he and Bobby Slowick probably got together and just had a nuts and bolts conversation and where neither side is getting sensitive.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I tried to evaluate whether I was just being a homer and looking at it or not. That's what I've seen from those guys out at practice every day.
Yeah.
And everybody is gushing about it.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Maybe Sean McDermott just doesn't have a capacity for nuts and bolts talk on his football team.
Maybe
up
not.
There in Buffalo.
Here was Tank Dell after the game down on the field with Mike Garofolo when Garofolo asked him about Stephon Diggs.
You get to the end zone, you get the handshake from Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
What's he meant for you and your entire receiving corps?
Yeah, that's my brother, man. He's been a good inspiration, a big inspiration for sure. He's been leading, you know, everybody, like not only him, you know, Nico, Woody, everybody's been leading, but man, he stepped up and took that role of leadership and helping us out, you know, with routes, with everything we need, man. So he's been great.
Yeah, he's been great. Come on, internet, be better. He's been great. Stop being such a troll. I'm trying to enjoy the Stephon Diggs era here in Houston.
I'll let the Buffalo – look, Buffalo's starting defense, by the way, was out there versus Caleb Williams. And when Caleb Williams was going off.
Yeah.
And he did. Like, man, it's the preseason. But Caleb Williams had a hell of a performance in that game.
Dude.
It's the preseason, and he's facing starters, but he's facing vanilla defenses. I'm not – I did a video this weekend where I jokingly called him Rookie of the Year after two snaps. And boy, did people take that literally.
Really?
People have been hating on me, who they think is a Bears fan, and about what a homer
out,
I am,
huh?
For the
yeah,
Bears.
Yeah, that's all you talk about is the Chicago Bears.
I'm like, dude, actually, no. I want him to fail, at least early in the season.
Week two, for sure.
Texans,
yeah,
right?
There was
an impressive performance. Take it for what it is.
A lot of the rookies.
A lot of the rookies
had good weeks.
Jaden Daniels, okay.
It was one drive.
I'm fascinated. It was one play, really.
Yeah.
he checked. They had something conservative called on 3rd and 6. He didn't like it, so he checked into this 4 vertical college football video game and went for it to a backup receiver versus a non-Sauce Gardner defensive back, but took a deep strike. But he had 3 passes in that game. He was 2 for 3, and he had a nice run on the goal line. That one is the ultimate. Like, all right, I'm going to take this with a grain of salt, because afterwards, Dan Quinn, who's the, you know, he's the super Pete Carroll wannabe positive all the time.
Yep.
He didn't, I don't think he was happy about the fact that Jaden Daniels checked into what he checked into on that play. But he did it on his own. And with the endorsement of Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn, remember, Dan Quinn lost a Super Bowl because his offensive coordinator was hyper-aggressive. And had no regard for game management. Now Cliff Kingsbury is his offensive coordinator.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's funny.
It was a nice throw and catch by it was a nice throw by Jaden Daniels.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm pulling for Jaden Daniels way more than I am pulling for Caleb Williams.
Mm-hmm. I like Jaden Daniels. All right, let's acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge the big performances from the weekend. We do it every Monday. I will recite a name. Ben, you got that old hotkey ready in there? You got that ready to go? I'll recite the name. Ben gives you the. Oh, you are? Okay. All right. Ben's having some issues in there.
No, Ben.
Are the issues resolved? The music just changed.
Is it that adult diapers issue I was talking about earlier in the show?
Okay. Ben, just tell me this. Do I need to say acknowledge me instead of the computer right now?
Acknowledge.
There we go. All right. Let's get it going. Spencer Arrighetti.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge Spencer Arrighetti and his huge performance from the from this weekend, but really back-to-back starts now. First rookie in AL history to have back-to-back 12-plus strikeout games. And he only gave up 2 hits. They were both home runs. He looked dominant. This isn't like when he dominated Colorado earlier in the year in a game that I was at where he just, like, Colorado looked. He was just throwing everything right in the middle of the zone and saying, go ahead, Colorado, see if you can hit it. The Red Sox have been the hottest team in baseball since the All-Star break, offensively. Their pitching stinks, but offensively, they've been the hottest team since the All-Star break.
Once Arrighetti made that almost psychological adjustment in, being more aggressive and understanding when to throw strikes and when not to. Remember, because for a little while he was being aggressive, but he was throwing lots of strikes with his aggression, and it wasn't working out so hot. He's found that balance, and he's gotten way better, too, at kind of working through some of the adversity sometimes and not getting frustrated. He's almost done. He's done in the course of one season kind of what it took Framber 3 years to do.
Yeah,
I think it's just really, managing all the emotional side of it. And it's been really fun to watch. Yeah. Arrighetti's been a pleasant, pleasant development.
Indeed. Let's get to Yordan Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez, Ben.
Acknowledge.
Thank you. There we go. We acknowledge Yordan Alvarez. Road Yordan is a monster. At Minute Maid Park this year, he's been, by his standards, very average. On the road, particularly at Fenway, he is an absolute beast. He's got 5 home runs in his last 5 games. He was 6 for 10 with 3 home runs, bunch of RBIs, had a double in there mixed in against the Red Sox this weekend. Yordan does this, man, every year where he'll go a bit of a spell, which he did. He went 3.5 weeks with 1 home run, and then he hits a home run, and then it's like the pipes are unclogged.
The whole thing about Yordan and his slumps is that he still has an 800 OPS.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yordan's slump is like Superman having a sprained ankle.
Right.
You're like, oh, all right, he's down for the count a little bit.
Right.
Or he sniffed some kryptonite at a party a couple weeks ago, and he isn't quite right just yet.
Wait. The bullets are still bouncing off his chest. Okay.
Right. He's a little bit weakened, but he's still really good. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Superman, when he got depressed that time for a little bit, he was up in his ice palace.
His fortress of solitude. Yeah.
I call it his ice palace. That's what he deserves.
Not to
your
his
little,
face. You
you're
didn't.
A fancy little princess. Get your ass back in the game.
Say that to Superman's face.
Say that to Yordan's face. I thought Yordan was staring at me when we were sitting behind home plate the other night, and I was actually kind of like, oh crap, I gotta don't do it. Don't get alpha'd by Framber or by Yordan. But it took every ounce of it took every ounce not to stare away.
All right, let's get to Cal McNair. Ben, I need to do a verbal acknowledge me.
Acknowledge me.
That's Cal, that's for Cal McNair. Yeah, Cal McNair, for those who missed it, Luke Combs had a couple shows at NRG Stadium this weekend. And at the Saturday show, Texans were back in town from the Pittsburgh game on Friday. At the Saturday show, Luke Combs had several Houston Texans come up on stage. And Cal and Hannah McNair were up on stage as well. And they were up there. They're dapping up Luke Combs. And at one point, Luke Combs pulls out a beer.
Yeah.
They hand Cal McNair a beer. And Luke Combs and Cal McNair share in the ultimate bro symbolic bonding gesture. They shotgunned a beer together up on stage. And the crowd went wild. Big pop.
It looked like Cal was, Cal didn't, I don't know if he's pulled off the full 100% successful shotgunning, but then he made up for it by punting the can off stage.
It was quite the performance. He punted the can. The crowd went nuts for this thing. Okay, now I've got.
It's hard to punt a small object wearing denim, you know?
Denim ain't probably cowboy boots.
I don't think he was wearing stretchy pants.
No.
Yeah, like wearing denim, old school denim, and cowboy boots that don't give you the best ankle flexion. He still punted it. He punted it. The punt was better than the shotgun.
Yeah, and Tommy Townsend was standing right next to him, and I think Tommy Townsend, you know, gave the. I think he acknowledged and approved of the punt and gave it the stamp of approval. Now I've got a little intel when it comes to this shotgun that Cal did at the concert. Okay.
I hear you've got it from a source very close to Cal.
Very close to Cal.
Like millimeters from Cal.
Possibly yes. Right now millimeters from him, yes.
Mm-hmm.
One, reportedly, according to sources,
yeah,
Cal needed to be told what a shotgun was.
I was surprised by that.
I was surprised by that part of it.
I mean, yeah. he was on the, you know, I feel like this might have been the precursor to the University of Texas football team having some of the issues that it would have. Even after Cal left, they did manage to win a national championship.
they did, yes.
But that vein of pomposity almost, it hurt them for a while. I feel like if a college football player doesn't know how to shotgun a beer, why are you even in college? My God.
Yeah, not forget about even football player, like college student, you know? And so,
yeah.
So I was a little surprised about that. And given that, I thought he really handled it like a pro, you know? Like, are you telling me not only was that his first one, he didn't know what it was? Number two, originally Luke Combs wanted all the players up on stage to shotgun a beer with him. So there's, you know, maybe a dozen guys up there, however many guys were up there. He wanted all of them to do it. But Cal told Luke Combs that, no, man, it's the season right now. You know, these guys are in training. I'll do it for them.
That's right.
I'll take one for the team here.
He's like the general grabbing a rifle and leading the charge.
That's 100%.
He's like, nope. I'll die with the rest. I'll die for you.
I got this. Yeah, I got this.
He sacrificed his BAC for his team.
You know,
I did notice. A million aggregator accounts chose to have the headline that C.J. Stroud shotgunned a beer on
stage.
And by
posting a video where he never had a beer in his hand.
You watch for 15 seconds, and you're like, yeah, it caught my attention because I'm like, okay, well, C.J. doesn't drink.
Right.
So this will be interesting. Yeah. Was it an N.A.? I don't know. And, so the vile scum, those people.
Yeah.
Not that I would have been distraught if he had shotgunned a beer, but... It's a 15-second video. Get the damn story right.
It's crazy. But, man, Cal...
So Cal fell on his beer can for the rest of them.
He did.
He just wanted to... Yeah.
He shotgunned to atone for everybody else's non-shotgunning is what he did.
Acknowledge me.
Thank you, Ben. We'll acknowledge him again. Yeah.
Remember, CJ, the other day we played that audio of him in that interview where he was talking about how he realized sometimes he gets on these podcasts and he starts using language that he doesn't normally use because he's with the guys. And that's not a good example to set for the kids.
Right.
So I feel like, yeah, CJ who doesn't drink, getting up there and succumbing to peer pressure and shotgunning a beer, that's exactly what you don't want your high school kids doing, you know?
And you know who knows that? Yeah. Cal McNair. That's who knows that. Yeah.
I wonder if Cal didn't have to learn how to do it with his key or anything like that.
I think it got handed to him with the hole in it already. Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to shotgun a beer and all of a sudden somebody's like, just use one of your keys.
Well,
and you're like, my key doesn't even have any metal on it anymore. It's a fob.
Especially because there's like a 50% chance it geysers right up into your face when you poke the hole in it.
That's true, too.
It's pretty embarrassing for anybody, let alone a billionaire owner of a football team.
Did Did Hannah have any input into that? Did she suggest to Kel, like, okay, why don't you do it?
Why didn't you shotgun? I don't know. That's a good question. She was up there on
Hannah's,
stage.
Hannah's the one that told you this, right?
That's where I got my information, yes. The inside story.
You can
story,
trust that source.
The inside story of Cal McNair's shotgun. You can only get that here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. So, yes.
That's the news we drop. It comes to shotgunning a beer. That's the stuff you can trust us with.
That's way more fun than trades and draft fodder and whatnot. Owner shotgunning beers. Yeah. It's actually
Ayuk's going to the Steelers.
Yeah, and they don't even get it right. I got all that right. That everything we just said, I have it from reliable sources. And that Cal punted the shotgunned beer into the crowd is actually a good segue to Tommy Townsend.
Acknowledge me.
Told Quez Watkins, the Steelers punt returner, who bobbled and muffed that punt. Literally just ran up on the scene, Tommy Townsend did, and said, "Catch the ball, B." But he said the word. He didn't just say the B. He said the word.
This is where... Okay, so that happened... That was one of the first drives, was it not?
Yes.
Was it early in the game? It happened before Cam...
It happened... That led to the Dario Gumbawale touchdown. That must.
Oh, okay.
The second touchdown that led to.
When did Cam Johnson... So who did what first? Did Tommy Townsend say that, or did Cam Johnson take a cheap shot on Tank Dell?
Cam went first. Cam hit Dell early. And then that muffed punt happened after that. Yeah.
So Cam Johnson tried to be a big man by hitting one of the smallest players in the league out of bounds.
Yeah. Jerk.
Want to prove, like, hey, I used to play Aussie Rules football, mate. His Aussie Rules football team should disown him after that nonsense.
Yes.
Hitting Tank Dell out of bounds in a preseason game. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck for Australia there, Cam Johnson.
Meanwhile, Tommy Townsend is on his way to Ring of Honor status with Texan fans right now. They love that clip of him calling Quez Watkins a B.I.
Dude, he's got some rock star elements to him, Tommy
Long
Townsend
hair,
does.
Man.
He's like a lead guitarist, man. He just goes out there and slays it.
Wiry frame.
And then talks trash afterwards. He's like a rock star who jumps out in the stage to fight some or jumps off the stage to fight somebody
in
the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. It was like we got to flaunt our upgraded hot new punter girlfriend right in front of our haggard ex-wife, Cam Johnston. Like, hey, look who's with me now, huh? Mm-hmm. Rockstar over here with the flowing locks. You're a Bill Burr lookalike, you clown.
Yeah, you're a wannabe Patty Mills.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know
Patty
you.
That's
yeah.
it. All right, let's do one more here. Get a little Olympics in. This hurts a little bit, I know, for Rocket fans, but we got to acknowledge Steph Curry.
Acknowledge me!
Steph Curry was the best player on the planet in the last two games of the Olympics. He almost single-handedly bailed the U.S. out in the semifinal game with 36 points, and then he was unconscious in the gold medal game against France. He hit 8 threes, including this circus shot with 32 seconds left in the game to put the U.S. up 9.
Durant, back to Curry. Dancing on Batum. Over the double team. Oh! It's a golden dagger!
Night!
Curry! Unconscious in the fourth!
That was Noah Eagle on the call for NBC. That shot... He had Kevin Durant and LeBron James, the two greatest players of this generation, arguably, wide open, standing at the three-point line across the court. And Steph's like... Nope, I'm going to fade away and chuck it over these two guys, and he just knocks it down.
The one guy on earth that you can do that, and you're like, yeah, I get it.
I get it.
So do we have a I grudgingly acknowledge you drop? We need something like, I grudgingly acknowledge you,
No,
Curry.
I'll try to find one today.
Hard for me not to look at any great Steph Curry moment and just not think of the championships that... He didn't rob them from the Rockets. He took them. He just took them.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yep. Here's what it sounded like. These people are definitely, if they're acknowledging Steph Curry, doing it very begrudgingly. Here was the French call of Steph's shot.
Nike reverse pour Kevin Durant. Ah, il a la main chaude, Steph Curry, il a la main chaude, il a la main chaude.
C'est pas possible!
Il a la main chaude, Steph Curry!
Were they calling him a cow?
Le cochon! No, that's a pig. I speak a little bit
vache,
of French.
Vache is a cow, is French for a cow. He's saying like vachon or something.
The French don't get as hyped up as some of the other nationalities. Like, I thought Noah Eagle was channeling like a little bit of like, kind of like his, you know, like the Mexican calls of things like that, where they go, oh! like
the
really
French don't. I don't think they do anything that, where it's just not a sneer.
Right.
That's kind of their permanent. It's like their perma bitch face is like their perma sneer.
Yes,
so it's almost perma-bitch. Even if the French had won, they're like, yeah, we won for now.
Yeah.
But every day has its twilight. They will learn.
French Seth. All right, preseason storylines that Texan fans may have to pay attention to. There was a lot of stuff going on around the league this weekend that Texan fans may have to pay attention to, and especially early in the season. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast. Text message here real quick. Have you all acknowledged Cal McNair shotgunning a beer on stage at NRG? We did. We spent a few minutes on it, but we know people dip in and out of this show, especially this time of day with your commute. And the hotkey was not working for Cal, so he had to get a Sean Pendergast verbal acknowledgement. So, Ben, let's give Cal his just
acknowledgement.
Yeah, we acknowledge Cal McNair for shotgunning.
And also, and for the, as Hannah told it to Sean T. Pendergast, Cub reporter, that Cal did that because they had wanted all the Texans players there to shotgun a beer. Cal said, hey, it's in season. I'll do it.
Yes.
I'll do it. Even though he didn't know how to shotgun a beer.
Right.
Which is, it's kind of nice. Okay. Think about every movie you've ever watched where there's some rich little bastard kid, the teenager that, you know, drives a Mercedes and is a jerk to everybody. And also, meanwhile, is living like he's, you know, living in Hollywood or something. Cal's the opposite of that. He maintains an innocence, despite having a, you know, well, plus Cal, you know, Cal, they didn't get really, really rich until Cal was already an adult. So he didn't have that silver spoon upbringing the
right,
way people might assume.
Oh, he's got a definite everyman quality, dude. Absolutely. Yeah. It's been an amazing couple years for Cal McNair. It's been really cool to see. So yes, we did acknowledge him. We did not acknowledge CJ Stroud's cowboy hat. Someone's asking us to do that. We'll acknowledge it.
Acknowledge me.
We'll acknowledge CJ Stroud wearing a cowboy hat.
CJ Stroud will definitely be part of, I think, some of the rodeo trail rides this year.
Yeah, if he's in town,
you know, I think
for sure.
Yeah. He's got the lay of the land a little bit. He's starting to get the rhythm of a year in the life of Houston. He's probably now seeing what a big deal the rodeo is.
Yes.
And I could see him. And it's not going to – I'm also intrigued. I need to see him up on Cade Stover's farm. Not near any heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Not near any heavy machinery. But the fact that those two are such good friends.
Yeah.
And yet CJ grows up in Southern California and Cade Stover grows up on a farm in rural Ohio. I need to see CJ on the farm. I bet CJ would go up there for a week and come back to Texas and buy a ranch.
Dude.
I think he'd really appreciate just actually being out there, waking up at dawn and
process
seeing what it's like on a farm and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ends up getting a place a couple hours outside of Houston.
That'd be fun. That would be fun. And you know what? The Texans for sure would send a camera crew to film the whole thing because they are cranking out some really good content these
really
days.
Really good cinematic quality content.
It's amazing, the stuff. Shout out to you know what? Acknowledge the Texans digital media
acknowledge
team.
Me!
Cranking out some really good content, man.
Who's the baseball player, the former Astro, that after he was no longer with the Astros, remember he injured himself stepping in a hole on his ranch? But he had bought a ranch when he first got to Houston. I'm blanking completely. The text line will have this already. But, like, yeah, I could see CJ just be like, late to the, you know, a gentleman farmer. Or gentleman rancher.
I like it. I just Googled Houston Astro injured on ranch and nothing's coming up right now.
Well, he wasn't an Astro when he got injured.
Oh, okay.
He was, yeah.
Should have put former. Damn it. All right, let's get to what I teased. The rookie quarterbacks this weekend, you know, the six quarterbacks drafted in the top 12, Drake May was the only one that was sort of an afterthought. Drake May wasn't even the best rookie quarterback on his own team. Joe Milton was getting all the love on New England. But Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., and Bo Nix all put up, well, Jaden Daniels is only in for one drive, but he was 2-for-3, and you pointed out earlier, Seth, a going into business for himself deep shot.
He went rogue.
Yeah.
Well, he went, you know, it was interesting. The head coach didn't approve, but Cliff Kingsbury was all
right
about it. He called his own. He checked out of a more conservative play into an all-vertical routes deep shot downfield.
Yep.
Yeah.
Led a touchdown drive, scored the touchdown himself on a nice zone read. But Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., all had really, really solid to very good outings. And the thing that Texan fans need to pay attention to, two of those three you could face in the first 3 weeks of the season. You right. will face, barring injury, you will face Caleb Williams in week two. And I don't know, man, if J.J. McCarthy keeps lighting things up, maybe the Vikings go, hey, you know what? Let's roll with the rookie instead of Sam Darnold.
I got excited about Caleb Williams because, look, he's in the NFC. The Texans aren't going to see them all the time. But it's got the makings of a potentially really good battle. Now, it was two series in the preseason versus the Bills starters, but it was also, you know, the classic preseason vanilla defense that you're facing. But all of the good things that you would hope to see out of Caleb Williams, he provided in those two series. So it's you got to do it over the course of a whole game, an entire season, yada, yada, yada. It was an impressive two series. It was a very, very impressive couple of series. So without reading too much into it, if I were a Bears fan, I would be over the moon right now in anticipation. It was very impressive.
Well, especially when you juxtapose it to Justin Fields, who, as you pointed out earlier, was still doing a lot of Justin Fields thing for the Steelers, because that was the big decision last year in February and March for the Bears was, do we stick with Justin Fields for another year or do we draft Caleb? I mean, they made the right. I feel safe saying one preseason game in, they made the right decision in drafting Caleb Williams.
There was a screen to the running back to DeAndre Swift, right?
Yes.
Who looked very good also.
He did.
Like the offseason, the Bears offseason so far, two series into it, looks really good. But on the first TV copy, I was like, oh, I don't know. Caleb Williams made a hell of a throw, like under duress. But I was like, I don't know if that was smart. You go back and watch from a different angle, and it was a really smart, good throw for five, you know, it was a 5 yards in the air, but it was very impressive. And he did a few very impressive things in the game.
Yeah. So, so are we nervous about either of these guys if we face them in week two or three, the Texans?
I think that Caleb Williams is still going to be a rookie and that he'll be seeing things that he hasn't seen yet in the NFL. So I'm not nervous. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited that look, he's in the running for, you know, from the get-go, not just based on the last performance, but he's a potential rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year. I think the Texans hopefully have enough tricks up their sleeve and just flat out the pass rush that they can generate without any tricks up their sleeve, then I'm not overly worried about it.
On the text page, people are suggesting Carlos Lee. Is that who you're thinking?
Yes, it was Carlos Lee.
Carlos Lee had a big ranch. Probably still does.
One of the things he was excited about coming to Houston for was that he realized, like, oh, I can buy thousands of acres here.
The team would give him a couple days off at rodeo time to go buy more livestock at the livestock show and rodeo here. He would come back he'd leave Florida for a couple of days to go buy a couple more cows to put on his farm or whatever.
I remember when he got injured stepping in a hole on his ranch, people thought it was one of those classic, you know, fake baseball injury reports where they come up with somebody sneezed and broke a rib.
Yeah.
Somebody got a massage and broke a rib. No, I think that sounded like the most legitimate off-field injury is that, he was out on his wrist. Sometimes you step in a hole. It happens.
Right. Some people are suggesting Jeff Kent. No, he got hurt washing his truck. That's how Jeff Kent got hurt. He may have a ranch somewhere. I don't know, but he got hurt.
Jeff Kent couldn't be a rancher because he wouldn't be able to get along with the cows. He's
or
got
anybody.
Notorious interpersonal and interbovine issues. Yes.
That's who I want to see get on a ranch with Cade Stover, Jeff Kent, so Cade Stover can punch him in the face.
Dude, if you can't get along with humans, good luck getting along with a cow.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. All right. Seth, we are done. We're out of time here on a Monday.
Oh, no.
Monday.
Yeah, but you guys get Texans radio?
Absolutely.
And get John Harris's expert opinion on everything that happened this weekend. John did very well in the booth, I thought.
I thought he did
really
great.
A really good TV effort by him. Yes.
Yep, him and ND were awesome. All right, so we will we'll turn things over, pass the baton to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you as well, my friend.
We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. We'll see all of you. We'll see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer up next. In the Loop after that, The Drive after that, Area 45 after that. We've got you covered all day long here on Sports Radio 610.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.